All right, welcome to the podcast. It's Pat and Stu in for Glenn Beck. Glenn is back on Monday. We are starting off with some of the presidential candidates. We're in 2020 season. It might be 2019, but we're in 2020 already. And so we'll go through some of the candidates who have already announced. There's a couple new ones in the last day or two that you need to know about. Also, we have Louis C.K., who's in trouble now for a comedy concert he gave recently. And he's too controversial. We'll delve into that.
He actually made fun of things.
I know.
So obviously, you can't do that. You can't make fun of things or people.
No,
you can't.
Cannot. That's not the line.
Not in
comedy.
A comedic way. That's just wrong.
And we'll tell you the all-time great show that the left is now coming after. They want to go after and like reverse history on the shows you used to watch. It's unbelievable. And we have global warming update. Bernie Sanders is telling us how we have to handle global warming.
If you're white, we don't want you at a women's march.
That's a great one, too. A lot of great stuff on the podcast today.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. This is the Glenn Beck program.
With Pat and Stu today for Glenn.
Back here, we're talking about Elizabeth Warren. And Pat, I would love to get your initial gut reaction. Does she have any chance to be the nominee or to be president of the United States?
No chance.
Of either?
No.
Now, will you eat your underwear if she becomes...
No, I will not.
I was hoping to goad you into that today.
No.
Because you did that last time in 2016.
Yes. Yeah, I felt pretty good about it in 2016. I still feel pretty good about it, but pretty good's not enough.
Well, she's actually running this time.
She's actually going to run, and she could win, but I really think it's a long shot. And The Hill has presented their initial rankings of the field, and at the top of the list, they have Beto O'Rourke. Their number one person, Beto O'Rourke.
How fast this stuff changes.
It's unbelievable.
The guy lost his race.
Yeah, right.
The only thing he's known for is losing.
Yes.
And yet he is going to be their top dog.
They're in love with him. They're absolutely in love with him. They said that there's an old cliche that Republicans fall in line and Democrats fall in love. And that's clearly what's happened with Beto O'Rourke.
It
they fell in love with Obama, and they fell in love with Beto O'Rourke. And I don't know if there's going to be any stopping him now for the nomination in 2020.
That's insane. I mean,
look,
we all have those romances throughout our lives, Pat. There are times we fall in love and we fall out of love. There was a time in which the Democrats were in love with Elizabeth Warren.
Yep.
That time is not now.
They did fall out of love with her, I think.
Yes, I don't know. I mean, it kind of feels to me like it was the whole Native American DNA test.
It does feel like it.
But that only pushed it over the edge.
Yeah. I think they were falling out of love before that.
Yeah.
And that kind of finished it off.
Some people are like, oh, well, this is what it is. They are just not comfortable with a woman at the top of the ticket. That's like, that's just ridiculous.
Stupid.
First,
Hillary Clinton was seemingly a woman.
Right.
Right?
I know. And now they're saying because it was Hillary Clinton and she lost, we can't nominate another woman. We can't. You know, another older woman is not the way to go. Which, I mean, you know, look, you can argue that. I think there is there's something similar about the way Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton handle things that seems equally incompetent.
Yes.
And that is not what you need to bring to the table against Donald Trump.
Not
like,
at all.
That's the one thing you need to be able to do.
And the DNA thing she handled so poorly. It was just, I think even to Democrats, they were like, okay, come on.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was
you're
like...
You're 1,024th Native American?
Right.
Please, stop it.
It's so bad. Like, you remember when they used to have those free HBO preview weekends? I remember because I never had HBO growing up. And then like one weekend a year, HBO would be on and you'd get to see HBO
yeah.
for free.
Yeah.
That's like what happened with the DNA test. It was like a free preview to her candidacy. And that does not look good. In that moment when Donald Trump... makes some accusation against her or some big news story breaks. Someone finds something from her past. How is she going to react to it? And they got the free preview. What she's going to do is like call 23andme.com and get them to do a DNA test. It was so incompetent and so horribly handled that.
When she found out she was 1,024, she should have just squelched it and not brought it up. It should have just been kept private.
Yeah.
It turned out I'm not Native American. So
yeah.
And if she would have said that, it probably would have been okay.
there probably was a way of handling it.
Yeah.
And it certainly wasn't
just
the way,
not
they
the
did
way
it.
She did.
No. Even if you're going to have a test and it comes out that you're 80% Native American, it shouldn't be you releasing that information.
Right.
You want to leak it to the New York Times and have them write up some big thing. You could do that. I got news for you. The New York Times would have been game for that one.
And it didn't.
They would have taken it.
It didn't help that the Cherokee people came out against her.
No.
It did not. It didn't help.
It didn't help at all.
No.
And it's Beto, on the other hand, never had that. I mean, again, he had his controversies. The guy, first of all, it's not even his name.
Right.
Second of all, he's on. He had a DUI. I mean, this guy had some stuff in his past, but he was able to weather it. And in fact, the Cruz people afterwards said they couldn't put him away.
It took everything they had just to win that election.
And they squeaked it out in Texas.
Say that. Yeah. I mean, he won by, what, 2.9, almost 3 points, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But he should have won by 20.
Yeah. And so the reason why you look at Beto, even though he lost as a big candidate, and this is why the Democrats are doing this, is because he outperformed what he was supposed to do, right?
Yes.
Like and he was actually not the biggest outperformer, which is kind of interesting. They went through this and they said, who outperformed the environment and their state more than any other Democrat? And they went through the list. Here's a few. Gillibrand was plus 3.8%. O'Rourke was plus 7.2%. So they think in a normal replacement level
should've
candidate.
Should have lost by like 9 or 10.
Should have lost by like 9 or 10, right?
Yeah.
That's a replacement level candidate. There are two that actually beat O'Rourke, which are interesting, and both of them are also being talked about as candidates. Klobuchar from Minnesota.
No way does she win.
I don't know.
There's no way she wins.
She doesn't have a lot of recognition at this point. She seems to have. She has a sort of moderate-ish vibe from what people tell me that are Democrats. They like. She's not like. She doesn't come off as a crazy liberal, but she's from a state in the Midwest, and maybe there's something there. I don't know.
She outperformed Beto.
Yeah, but
that's interesting.
Plus 8%. So O'Rourke was plus 7.2. But the number one, by a wide margin, actually, 9.4% overperforming was Sherrod Brown in Ohio. And he's
really?
The guy that there's an element.
He's
of,
on this list, too.
Yeah, easy. Yeah, because he's one of those guys. If he's sort of like it's Joe Biden, but he's newer. Right. Like
younger.
He's that same sort of vibe as far as like he's middle class and he's no nonsense and he's populist and all that stuff. But he comes from Ohio, obviously a swing state. He did very well there in a time where it's not particularly blue. Of all candidates in this entire measure, of all the Democrats, Elizabeth Warren.
Wow.
Elizabeth Warren did not have any value above replacement, basically finished as any replacement candidate would. The only Democrat with a lower score was Menendez, who was in the middle of a corruption trial.
Wow.
So that is, I mean, that's a big, she just isn't, she's not even loved by Massachusetts.
No.
So how is she going to be loved by the rest of America?
I don't think she is.
I don't think she is.
So you had Beto at number one, according to The Hill. Bernie Sanders still second. Now, look, this guy would be almost 80 years old by the time he would become president if he won the election. If he got the nomination, I think he's 76 now, so he'd be 78 in 2020 if he were to win. Now, when you start out in the presidency older than the average age of death for an American male, it's not a good sign.
No.
That's not a good sign.
Really?
And maybe we enter something into the Constitution that maybe if you're past the average age of expiration, you don't get to run.
Now, if healthcare improves, we'll inch it up.
Exactly.
I think we
but
can do
for
that.
Now, for when now. The average age of death for the American male is 76 and you're 78, no, I'm sorry, you can't run for president. No.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
So these are the top 10 Democrats. They didn't go into all 50 or 100 or however many are going to wind up running. They just listed the top 10 here. And the first at number one, the candidate with the best chance at winning the Democratic nomination, they think, in The Hill, is Beto O'Rourke.
Robert Francis O'Rourke. Bob Frank O'Rourke.
Right. Mm-hmm. Number two would be Bernie Sanders, who's really not even a Democrat. He's a socialist. I guess they're synonymous now. They're pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Socialist Party has taken over the Democrat Party. So they don't even care anymore that the socialists are taking over the party.
No longer a racist slur to call a Democrat a socialist.
Now it's almost a compliment now.
Yeah, now it's a compliment.
They love it now.
But just got to keep up with this stuff.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, number three. Now, I think Biden's got a better chance than Sanders.
Biden has to be number one on this list. The guy's leading the polls by 20
right?
points.
Yeah.
You know, this
20
is
points.
Again, let's go back to, you know, just a few years ago. This is the same situation that happened with Donald Trump. Everyone was like, ah, that guy doesn't really have a chance, and he's leading by 20 points, and he just kept leading by 20
so
points.
So weird, yeah.
And I kept remember thinking, someone's going to come up here and challenge him. Aren't they? No, he's just going to win. He's going to win. And I think there's a chance that this happens with Biden.
And that's kind of interesting because the Hill points out Biden leads almost all opinion polls at this stage, and how you rate his chances depends largely on how much you think that matters. Well, I think it matters quite a bit. As you just pointed out, with Trump, it mattered a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, we kept saying, all right, he's going to fade eventually. Nope.
No.
He didn't.
And I think part of this is, I mean, name recognition. There's nobody on the Beto O'Rourke has not even close. This penetrates talk radio.
He was third,
in fact. Yeah, right.
He was third.
But I mean, when you talk about name recognition for the average person who isn't listening to talk radio, who isn't obsessed with CNN on the left or MSNBC, Beto O'Rourke is a blip on their radar if they've heard his name at all.
That's very true.
Joe Biden was vice president of the United States for 8 years that they remember fondly.
Yeah.
You know, that is you have to factor that in. It's a big deal. Now, I'm not 100% sure he's going to run, though it does seem that way.
Seems likely.
But you see these little cliques forming. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are going to have a tough time coexisting. They're going to have a tough time because they're going to battle it out for the same voters. I think the same thing happened with, like, you know, Joe Biden and, you know, if you want to go Sherrod Brown or one of these other more moderate candidates. That's the place he's going to take. I'm the common sense Democrat. That's what he's going to try. It's going to be tough to win a primary with that. And I think that is, well, Beto O'Rourke will say, he'll just go for it, right? Elizabeth Warren will just go for it.
I think so. Yeah, they'll both be the socialist candidates.
Yeah.
And so will Sanders. And then in comparison, Biden will look really moderate compared to them. And that might help him a lot.
It's also scary for the general. Because if Biden is able to somehow win that primary coming off as relatively sensible.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's not easy for Joe.
No.
But if he's able to pull that one off, it's going to fool, again, a lot of people who aren't focused on his actual positions. Are going to think, well, he's more moderate. He's the one in the middle, and I can deal with that.
And as we mentioned, he had 30% support in the CNN poll last month. And number two was Sanders at 14. So he more than doubled the second place guy.
Mm.
Beto was back in third at 11%. And then 9% in another poll. But Biden, far and away, leading the opinion polls. At number four, they have Kamala Harris. Now, I don't know that she has that much of a shot either.
I'm a little more bullish on Kamala Harris than, let's say, an Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, probably a better chance than Warren, but not as good as Biden or maybe even Beto.
I think you're right. I mean, there's obviously a place for the Democrats who there's some argument among Democrats to take someone who's different. Right.
Yeah.
Like, they, Biden and Beto are I mean, and I know this is shocking. Because his name is Beto, but these are just boring white dudes. Okay.
And, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You're talking about Beto O'Rourke,
yes,
right?
Yes.
The Hispanic guy.
Bob Frank O'Rourke. Yes. And, you know, this is the exact thing that they say the Republicans do, right? Which is take some white guy, you know, and throw him out there and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, Kamala Harris, I think, is going to come at this from the opposite perspective and say women and say, you know, all sorts of I'm different in X, Y, and Z ways and make
sure
she'll have an identity politics argument and she's not as incompetent as an Elizabeth Warren or stilted or, you know, again, like people keep
saying.
She's
photogenic.
Yeah. She's a prosecutor. So she's like relatively, she's not Cory Booker. If you saw her and Cory Booker, they both did things that were wrong during the Kavanaugh stuff. But Cory Booker looked like an idiot doing it.
He looked like a buffoon.
Right?
He really did.
While her points were just as bad as his points, she came off as much more credible. And so I think she's more dangerous to not only win the nomination, but also win the election than someone like Elizabeth Warren, or, you know, another example of this, and she can't run, obviously, this time, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You know, Republicans, if they have a choice between Kamala Harris and Ocasio-Cortez defining the Democratic Party, they salivate over Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know what she's talking about. She's an out... She'll say she's a socialist. You know, like, those things are things Republicans desire in an opposition, right? Where Kamala Harris is... She'll have the same policies as Ocasio-Cortez, but she's not going to describe them the same way. And she might also know how the government functions, which is another positive in her favor.
That's very true. So we get all the way down to number five before we get to Elizabeth Warren on this particular list. Fifth, according to The Hill. And then you mentioned Sherrod Brown, the senator from Ohio. And as you said, he won his Senate reelection by, was it 9 points over...
They had the replacement measure we were talking about, like, you know, wins above replacement in baseball.
Yes.
Like,
yep. So it's a measurement like that.
He had the best performance among all Democrats.
Yeah. And he won his Senate reelection race in a state Trump carried by 8 points over Clinton. So,
and he won it easily.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not a close call as we went towards the end of it.
Not at all.
So it's pretty impressive. And I don't know. I mean, people in Ohio might know him better to say whether this guy could pull off a national spotlight. It'll be interesting.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program. Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
Louis C.K. is under fire right now because he said some things in a comedic way that the left doesn't really like.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And comedy has to be completely politically correct.
And safe for everyone. Everyone has to leave feeling good.
Yes, thank you.
There was that...
You can't offend anybody.
A comedian who had a gig booked at a college towards the end of the year last year, and he got his... You know, his thing he had to sign to perform and get his money. And it was like, you have to make sure that you, you know, can make sure and confirm that everyone will have a good, happy, healthy experience and they won't be offended. And it's like, I'm a comedian.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was in print.
Did he sign it or did he?
No, I think he said no, he wasn't going to sign it. I mean, it wasn't like a big known guy, but he can't. The whole point
it's
of comedy is to
man.
Push you into an uncomfortable place.
It's right? Unbelievable.
A lot of times it helps you examine. A viewpoint that you have that, you know, it makes you uncomfortable, right? Like you go to a place that you're not necessarily going to go in a normal circumstance. And that's not the job of comedy. Number one is to make you laugh. And that is gone from every late night show now. Now it's just trying to get, you know, Trump applause lines. Clapter, as Glenn calls it. It's no longer laughter. It's clapter. You're just going for that. Oh, yes, he said that thing I heard on a blog. Like, that's the whole, you know, level of comedy now. And, you know, I guess that's
especially
something.
Especially for Saturday Night Live. That's what it's become.
They don't even try. They're not even trying for actual jokes anymore. They're just making points. We played the thing, I think you were on the show that day, Pat, where we did the thing they did with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it was just praising Ruth Bader Ginsburg in a song in a rap for like 4 minutes.
Ridiculous.
There weren't any jokes in it, other than it was just a rap about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which, generally speaking, is a funny concept. It was just saying how great she is for 4 minutes. Like, that's not what is that?
So Louis, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And now Louis C.K. has always gone to the most uncomfortable place possible. It is his style of comedy. If you've never heard Louis C.K. do comedy before, this is what he does. And he goes to the darkest place in the recesses of your mind and exploits it and makes it into this big deal and takes it to ridiculous extremes. But it is a thing, you know, like you're going to a place where you wouldn't normally go. I mean, he's been in trouble for this before. And now the left is all fired up because, oh, this guy's basically an alt-righter. He's basically alt-right. He might as well be on Donald Trump's campaign team. Listen to this guy. and it's not okay now because, you know, they can now go after him. He was this protected celebrity. He was, you know, the hierarchy of all comedy. He was the guy they praised as the most brilliant comedian there was. And now he had his sexual harassment thing that went on, and he's trying to make a comeback. And now it's easy to throw, you know, they're trying to pressure him into being a crazy leftist. If he was coming out and being a crazy leftist right now, they would not be criticizing him for making a comeback. But because he's doing the same stuff he was doing before, And some of that stuff hits on the right and some of it hits on the left. He is now, he's getting hammered not only by just liberals, but like his old friends who are comedians. They're all coming out and saying like, you know, his old people who used him for their fame are now coming up and just hammering him in a moment where, let's be honest about it, he doesn't need more hammering. I mean, he's been hammered. He's had a tough year. And he said he's made mistakes and he's admitted to that. But so we have the audio from this. Should we go through this a little bit?
Yeah.
So the two things you're going to hear, first of all, he's made fun of Parkland kids. Now, he never mentions Parkland kids, but you'll hear where he goes with that. And also, he crosses lines for the left that you're not allowed to cross anymore. You're not even allowed to even be mildly critical or ask questions or anything about these topics anymore.
And especially with these kids who are in the political arena now. They're in the political arena. And I guess they're still sacred cows. You can't say anything about them.
It's amazing.
It really something.
So here it is. This is obviously, it's Louis C.K. It's, you know, it's stand-up club comedy. So it's a little rough as far as the content goes. Obviously, it's all bleeped out. But just in case you're with your little kids, you might not want to listen to this. Here is Louis C.K. making fun of Parkland kids.
I'm a little disappointed in the younger generation, honestly. Because I'm 51 years old. And when I was like 18 to my 20s, I mean, we were idiots. We were getting high, doing mushrooms and and then older people were like, you gotta get your together. And we were like, yeah, you. And I was kind of excited to be in my 50s and see people in their 20s and be like, they're crazy. These kids are nuts, but they're not. They're just boring. Telling them you shouldn't say that. What are you, an old lady? What the f*** are you doing? That's not appropriate. You're a child. Why are you each other and doing jello shots? Like, why aren't you?
The crowd loves it.
You should address me. They're like royalty. They tell you what to call them.
Mm-hmm.
You should address me as they, them. Because I identify as gender neutral. Oh, okay. Okay.
Can't say this stuff.
You should address me as there. Because I identify as a location. And the location is your mother's.
Right, okay.
It doesn't have to be that nasty. But it can be. They testify in front of Congress, these kids? Like, what the f***? What are you doing? You're young. You should be crazy. You should be unhinged. Not in a suit saying, I'm here to tell f*** you. You're not interesting. Because you went to a high school where kids got shot? Why does that mean I have to listen to you? How does that make you interesting? You didn't get shot. You pushed some fat kid away. And then, now I gotta listen to you talking?
Man.
Now, first of all, we can play all the political games. That is brilliant stuff.
Yeah,
He's just as funny as he's always been. You know, you're not allowed.
Oh, but the left is now. Oh, he was never funny, and he's not funny now.
He's mocking Parkland kids. No, he's not. He's saying, like, look, you know, this is something everybody thinks, right?
Yes.
Like, yes, we all understand they went through a tragic circumstance, but that does not make them experts on gun violence. We all know that that's true. Everybody in America knows that that's true.
And they proved it over and over again.
Right?
Yeah.
And so he's making a joke there and illustrating it to a ridiculous extreme.
Yep.
Right? But everybody knows there's a nugget of that is true.
And it's also true that when you jump into the political fray, you've opened yourself up to criticism. And for some reason, that doesn't apply to them. Well, I'm sorry, it does. Mm-hmm. It does. If they're going to start preaching gun control, they've opened themselves up to things like this.
And I think, you know, their points have to be able to be debated. You can't have a person in society who has an unquestioned... This is one of the issues when you talk about... When they try to go to this level of like... Well, all scientists are always right about everything, so therefore we listen to everything they say. Now, look, scientists are right about a lot, you know, and
they're also wrong a lot,
and they're sometimes they're wrong, right? And if there can't be someone with this deity like place in our society where everything they say is automatically true and respected, right? Your points always have to have an ability to be criticized. Now, if you're taking shots at, you know, at kids who are in school shootings because they're bad. You're taking ad hominem sort of attacks. That's a totally different world. And I don't think that's the right world, right? No one thinks that that's the right thing to do. But you have to be able to criticize their points. And I think there's also an idea to criticize their standing. It's fair. It is fair to say, look, they may have valid points, but them making them, it does not give it any more validity. It does not make it more true that you can't, like, having a Second Amendment, I believe, is a really good thing, and the left believes is a really bad thing. Because someone went to a school where people were shot does not make either one of those sides more right or wrong. It's just an emotional tie into that argument that's been raging since 1775. You know, it's a long time people have been talking about this. And you don't, just because you have an emotional tie, this is why this is what the left tries to do after every shooting. Make it as emotional as possible so people forget the sober arguments for guns. Hey, forget it for a couple of weeks while we pass this. Then you can go back to thinking whatever you want. And that was the problem that I think a lot of people had. But again, Louis C.K. is just talking about something that's very obvious. And this has been, very specifically, what he's tried to do with his comedy for a long time. When we come back here in 60 seconds, we're going to let him explain to you exactly how he comes up with this comedy. And this should not be controversial. And this is the way comedy should work. It shouldn't be a controversial point. And we'll give you that. And what he used to say, which was completely okay with the left, when he was asking tough questions and it didn't go after their sacred cows, they were completely loved this guy. We're talking about Louis C.K. He's under fire from the left for his, you know, his commentary. Really, I think, you know, the Parkland thing, I think, is a ruse. I mean, what they're upset about is him making fun of the gender stuff, I think, more than anything else.
Yes.
But here is Louis C.K. in a previous special talking about basically exactly how he comes up with the stuff he talks about, how he finds those dark areas. Here's Louis C.K. explaining himself. This is clip one.
Everybody has a competition in their brain of good thoughts and bad thoughts. Hopefully the good thoughts win. For me, I always have both. I have, like, the thing I believe, the good thing. That's the thing I believe. And then there's this thing. And I don't believe it, but it is there. It's always this thing and then this thing. It's become a category in my brain that I call, of course, but maybe.
That's it, right? That's everybody has that, right?
Yeah.
You know, you believe something, but there's that little thing that it you know, maybe around the edges comes after you. Listen to Louis C.K. Now, remember, this is a time in which the left loves him. He's honored, respected. When this special is going on, he's at the peak of his career, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everything he says is gold. Everyone loves the guy. Here's him going after the military. Now, before I play this clip, everybody in our audience obviously loves the military. And I love the military. But again, listen to his setup there. There's something he believes, he knows is true. And there's something kind of there. And remember, it's his job to exploit the darkest corners, right? That people don't
look.
Which
is just kind of what he said.
Right. Yeah. This is comedy. This is what you're supposed to do. Here's clip two.
Of course, if you're fighting for your country and you get shot or hurt, it's a terrible tragedy. Of course. Of course. But maybe if you pick up a gun and go to another country and you get shot, it's not that weird. Maybe if you get shot by the dude you were just shooting at, it's a tiny bit your fault.
I like it. You're not allowed to say that.
No.
Right?
No.
But the left loved him.
Oh, they loved
that. When he was saying that.
Yep.
Oh, and he was going down those roads. He was America's biggest hero.
Mm-hmm.
He could say that all he wants. And look, he should be allowed to go down even that road. As offensive as it probably is to you to think about that and bring that up in public.
Because it's really uncomfortable and offensive to hear that about veterans.
Right. However, that is his job.
Yeah.
And it's the way he looks at the world. And as he said, he doesn't believe it.
And when he was saying that stuff, we weren't saying, hey, Louis C.K. should be silenced.
Right.
He shouldn't be allowed to speak.
No.
He shouldn't appear on specials. We shouldn't have any access to Louis C.K.'s disgusting viewpoints. Nobody was saying that on the right. Nobody.
And there's so few comedians. If I were a comedian right now in the middle of this environment, I don't think I'd be able to deal with the left at all.
Oh.
I might still believe in socialist policies and all the things mm-hmm. that, like, you know, that every comedian seems to believe in, like yeah. every entertainer does. But, like, how could you take them seriously?
I don't
they
know.
They are targeting you. They're destroying your industry because, as Louis C.K. pointed out, it is this idea. They're almost royalty. They get to tell you what you say. They get to tell you how you address them. They get to tell mm-hmm. you what opinions are acceptable for you to have as a comedian. How the hell can you stand up for that?
And, you know, if you mention any of that, as Jerry Seinfeld has,
yeah.
then they come after you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
happening.
It's right.
happening.
It's
right
happening right now. Where's the... We have the... I have a story. There's a new list out. The 13 jokes that are no longer acceptable from Seinfeld.
Oh, jeez. My gosh.
Oh, here it is.
From the show?
From the show.
Or from his stand-up comedy?
From the show.
Okay.
13 jokes Seinfeld are now super offensive. Number one, the soup Nazi. No longer allowed to like the soup Nazi anymore. Number
why?
Two,
do they explain they say, why?
What might be the most well-known joke from Seinfeld is also one of the most disappointing ones. Maybe in 1995, when the episode titled The Soup Nazi aired, it felt okay for viewers. But in 2018, when groups of neo-Nazis have become noticeably emboldened, using the term Nazi to label someone as a joke doesn't sit so well anymore. These are people telling us what
heavens.
Comedy is supposed to be.
That's unreal.
Number two, the Indian giver joke. Joking about a Native American person being an Indian giver was never okay, and it's definitely not okay now. Joking that a racial stereotype about an oppressed group is actually truthful and is at a dangerous road is, and Seinfeld probably couldn't get away with doing that in 2018. Who are these people? Who lives like this?
Also, I might be wrong on this, but the term Indian giver, is not more a slam on the U.S. government who used to give them land all the time and then take it back?
That makes sense.
Isn't that more a slam on the U.S. government than it is the actual Indians?
I never thought about it.
I got to think that maybe.
That makes sense, though.
It does, doesn't it? An Indian giver, so you gave it to the Indians and then you took it away.
Right.
Just the whole definition of that phrase.
They should be on board with this one. It's criticizing the U.S. government.
Right.
I like that. Kramer stomping on a burning Puerto Rican flag. This episode actually caused a controversy when it aired. The New York Times reported that the president of the National Puerto Rico Rican Coalition called it an unconscionable insult. It's unacceptable that the Puerto Rican flag be used by Seinfeld as a stage prop under any circumstances. Over 20 years later, the joke is still sour.
Wow.
The joke that someone thinks Jerry and George are in a same-sex relationship. Can't joke about that anymore. When Kramer has house guests from Japan sleep in his dresser drawers. Can't joke about
that. I don't remember that episode.
I don't really either. When Jerry accidentally gets a man deported. Oh, that's wrong. You can't talk about that. Cedric and Bob appeared in three episodes, including a Puerto Rican Day episode. Each episode they appear, the two characters who make up a gay couple play up stereotypes with homosexual male culture. Oh, my gosh, you can't do that. Again, I mean, you know, what was the show, Will and Grace? I mean, Will and Grace was put on the air initially. It's seen as this big, like, boundary-breaking show. It's about gay issues, and it's one of the only stories that have been like that. Will and Grace largely was an issue where they created a show in which they could make a ridiculous gay stereotype and make as many gay jokes as they wanted with protection. I swear to you, the ridiculous stereotypes in that show are way worse than any other show I've ever seen. Yes, they have one quote-unquote normal guy who's gay. But then they just throw in another guy who does every horrible stereotype that has ever been used against gay people.
Right, and that was praised. Well, Joe Biden said,
Will and Grace probably did more to educate the American public than almost anything anybody's ever done.
Oh, I can't wait for him to run.
So,
I can't wait for it.
It's ridiculous.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Sad news for people living in Humboldt County, California. The organizers for the Women's March that was going to happen there, mm-hmm. They announced on Friday it's been canceled due to whiteness. Canceled due to whiteness. A lot of white people had signed up to participate, and you can't have that. It's embarrassing.
They just couldn't find enough black anti-Semites to fill the... unfortunately.
No, they couldn't. They couldn't do it.
That's sad.
So there were, I guess, not enough blacks and Hispanics for their liking. So They said they're still interested in holding an event in March on International Women's Day, but they did have to cancel this one due to, and this is a quote, overwhelmingly white participants.
I love that.
What?
So it's interesting, too, because this is essentially an implicit criticism of black people and Hispanics, right? It's not like they said, we don't allow blacks and Hispanics to come to this rally. Right. It's right. For whatever reason, blacks and Hispanics didn't want to come to the rally.
They didn't feel like it.
They didn't feel like it for whatever reason.
That would seem to be an indictment on minorities, wouldn't
it? From their perspective, right?
Like, yes.
Wait, why aren't the black and Hispanic voters or, you know, people and you know, they don't even have to be voters, but just people. Why aren't they showing up to our stupid little rally? It's almost like they don't care about this issue. In a way, it's critical of them. Right. Plenty of white people showed.
Yeah.
White people showed. I assume even men showed to the women's rally.
But not enough
black people.
The Census Bureau data from this county says 74% are white, 12% Hispanic, 6% Native American, 2% Asian, and 1% black. So if you didn't have at least those percentages going, I guess the rally's not worth doing.
They can get 1% black to show for the rally?
Apparently not.
Well, and the thing is, of course, there's no actual answer here. If you had 13% Hispanic and 1% black for all that diversity, but 6% Native American, it will never be enough.
No, it's not.
I mean, 74% of this county is white. That's about the percentage of the United States in general. You know, the NFL is called racist, and 75% of the league is black.
Yes.
And that's not black. That's still racist.
That, especially for like LeBron James, who doesn't, he's not even in the NFL.
No, right.
And yet he's calling out the NFL for being the white owners have a slave mentality.
Oh, I'm so glad after all my LeBron dislike over all of these years that so many people are now seeing the light.
Oh, I'm right there with you now. I just can't stand this guy. Every time he opens his mouth, you see how ridiculous he is.
He really is ridiculous.
Seriously, these men that are making, you know, anywhere from $2 million to $25 or $30 million a year, you have the audacity to call them, to call those owners who are paying them that money, they have a slave mentality?
Unreal.
Maybe you need to look up what a slave is, because by definition, they don't make any money for playing these games. Plus, they're not forced into playing these games.
Right.
There's a lot of problems with
it. The only difference is all the things.
Is everything, yeah.
Yeah, all...
But
every
it's just
single
that
possibility.
Wow.
You know, there's never, that's an amazing thing though. First of all, look, what is the problem with racism, right? The problem with racism is you're taking a group of people and you're identifying them in a, you're grouping them all together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you are, disliking them for whatever reason. You're
or
saying
assigning
a
tendency to all of them just based on their skin color.
Exactly. Tell me how this Women's March thing isn't racist. They're first of all identifying people based on race and making decisions based on skin color, which is never a good idea. Never make a decision based on skin color. Easy rule to live by. It's a freaking easy one to live by.
I think so.
Never ever do it, period. That means not giving them all sorts of perks above and beyond other colors, like saying, oh, black people get more than Hispanics. It's not doing that either. And it's saying, hey, black people get less than Hispanics. It's not doing that either. It's neither. You never make a decision based on skin color or race. Really easy. But here they're saying, hey, not enough black people came. So number one, they're making a decision based on race. Number two, what they're implicitly saying, because they believe their organization is good, is they're saying the people who aren't coming are bad. How is it not implicitly racist?
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
It was a great vacation. It was a great Christmas and New Year's season, right up until Friday morning, I thought, when I first got a text, Jeffy just had a heart attack. I'm like, wait, what? I mean, pretty nerve shattering and pretty scary. And so he wound up in the hospital, and in true Jeffy fashion, was hassling the nurses every time they came in. Mm-hmm. Was he was hassling the EMTs mm-hmm. when they were working on him mm-hmm. as he's having a fairly major heart attack. But fortunately, he pulled through pretty well. And by Friday afternoon, he's sitting up in a chair next to his bed at the hospital.
Amazing.
Just incredible. So I think that's a real tribute to, first of all, modern medical science and the chances that you have if you have a heart attack and you make it to the hospital, there's a pretty good chance they can save you.
Which is incredible. That was not always the case.
Right.
We've talked about this before with the issue of, you know, the rates of people dying by disease, cancers, you know, heart disease, all of these things have dropped dramatically in the last couple of decades. We've made massive improvements just because, you know, the technology has improved and we made major leaps. We don't necessarily like recognize it, but that really was a stark example with Jeffy, you know.
Even though our, you know, healthcare in this country is so pathetic and rates behind Botswana.
Right. It's like, I don't think that's true, guys.
I don't think it's true.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's a perfect system. There's lots of issues with it and cost can be a problem at times.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in reality, like, thank God we live here. Thank God we have the access to the system that we have. And thank God they haven't screwed it up yet. And they're trying. They're doing everything they can to screw it up.
Yeah.
But thank God so far they've been unsuccessful.
And we got somebody on the phone now who can actually attest to all of this. Hey, Jeffy.
I can attest to, yes, the healthcare, at least the help, you know, like the ambulance workers and the fire rescue guys, while I was, I may have made some comments to them that they didn't appreciate,
mm-hmm.
They were great. And had it not been for, you know, my wife calling and them getting here saying, yes, you're having a heart attack, and yes, we're taking you to the hospital mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. There'd be no more me. There's no question about
right,
that.
Right, which is... But really amazing to think of that we could have lost you. But you mentioned something interesting that your wife did go ahead and call 911, which you told her not to do.
Well, I did. But really, that last time was more of a no, but yes, call and get them here now.
So she was supposed to read between the lines then.
Yeah. And she did.
Yeah, she did.
It's a great time for subtlety, Jeffy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a great time because, you know, really, I know, you know, you talk about the health care, but, you know, preventative care probably would have been a smart thing there, too.
What?
For a couple,
I know.
A couple of days prior to the heart attack that didn't go away, you know, I woke up with chest pain and I was like, oh, I'll be fine. And it went away and it'll be okay.
Wow.
And, you know, I probably should have said something to someone.
Maybe.
Probably
yeah,
should
potentially.
Have had them check.
Since you've been injecting lard directly into your veins for years.
apparently what happens when you do that, the left side of your heart just completely shuts down.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
That was really scary.
I saw the picture of it completely blocked. That's really wow. scary looking.
So, and Jeff,
you see the...
It was 100%, right? In one of the arteries, 100%
yeah,
blockage.
Side, the left side, which apparently is nicknamed the Widowmaker for a good reason, was completely blocked. And the doctors have told me that, you know, if I didn't come when I did, that would have been it. I wouldn't have made it. And most of the time, people don't make it in time. Which
it's really chilling.
That sure is. It sure is.
Kind of makes your ears perk up and think, okay, maybe I should listen to what they tell me now. And hopefully you're doing that.
It's probably not a good idea to inject the lard directly.
No.
It's just a thought.
Or the tars and nicotines directly into your lungs. Because that can constrict the arteries and cause a problem.
They are not a fan of that. The doctors in the hospitals are not a fan of the nicotine input at all.
Mm-hmm.
That was their big case. But, you know, the outpouring from our listeners and
so
of course,
great.
Co-workers was overwhelming. I mean, really, thank you all. It was really overwhelming, and it meant so much. And, hey, it worked. Your prayers and well wishes and thoughts worked.
Yeah, by the way.
I survived. I know.
I know.
It was
It's an interesting dynamic you have going on, Jeffy, because I the outpouring was unbelievable. I cannot remember ever seeing anything like it. I mean, for whatever reason, this audience loves Jeffy, and I never been able to put a finger on as to why, but they love it. But it was funny to see people who were like, "Oh my gosh, like, this is the, you know, I can't believe this. We're praying for you, Jeffy." And then you look at the Twitter handle. It's like, "Jeffy is fat." You're just like, I don't know. Can you make that? Your Twitter name is Jeffy is fat. You're not allowed to.
That's fantastic.
But I mean, it really was. I mean, honestly, like people really like really care. And that's it's cool. Every once in a while you see that, you know.
Every once in a while you do, although you find out just really they don't really, because in the hospital, you figure you have to stay there and they take care of you. On about the third day, they're like, "You're done, get out."
Right. Well, it's true. And I actually took that as a real sign of, I was amazed by just like the quality of our healthcare system in a weird way, Jeffy, because I saw you yesterday, was it? And you were up and about, and they said to you, "Look, you know, you can go back to work whenever you feel okay. Like, you're basically not overly restricted."
It's amazing.
No, I have to go see a heart doc now and get his direct input, but because the guy that was on call for the surgery, who, you know, just an uncalled heart surgeon, amazing. You know, when I left the house here, apparently I got worse on my way to the hospital. So I bypassed everything when I went to the hospital. I went right into the surgery. And I just remember being, "Hey, we're going to go take you right into surgery." And that was it. And these guys are incredible. I mean, really. When Pat talked about me sitting up, and I have some more stories about one of the reasons I was sitting up was because of the great bed that they have there. But the other reason is that, you know, really I was okay. I mean, my chest really hurt, obviously, and, you know, my lungs because of the surgery. But, I mean, I was okay. And now, you know, I'm trying to get my energy back and be okay. But as far as hurting and aching and not being able to get up in the day, that's all gone.
It's amazing.
Amazing.
Jeffy, I wanted to ask you, did you open up the Christmas present I bought for you?
I did. I thought I had posted it, but it hadn't been posted yet. So I did open up your Christmas. But thank you very much. Mm-hmm. It meant a lot. It meant a lot to me that you would give me a recalled lettuce.
Wow, that is thoughtful.
A giant bag of romaine all wrapped up in pretty Christmas.
That is really a thoughtful gift.
I mean, I guess in today's world, if you've got recalled lettuce in your freezer and you don't know what to do with it, give it to the fat neighbor. I guess that's the plan. I don't know.
I thought you'd appreciate it, Jeffy.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. It's been a lot.
Well, we, you know, we miss you, and you're of course, can't wait for you to come back. But don't, typical Jeffy's like, "I think I might come in on Wednesday," and I'm like, "No, we're not accepting you on Wednesday." Stay by at least a few days. The Chewing the Fat, the podcast with Jeff Fisher, will come back. It's waiting for you when you come back. But please don't rush back. I can't deal with another one of these things. I can't deal
with it. Yeah, that was too scary.
Too much to do here, Jeffy. Too much work to do.
It really was scary. And again, thank you to the outpouring from, you know, the listeners and the fans and the coworkers. I mean, it truly was overwhelming, and it means a lot to myself and my family for sure.
Have you tweeted out the picture of the EMT trying to push you up the hill yet?
I'm glad you brought that up, but no, I have not. I thought I just thought that was, you know, going to stay in house, but I guess not.
No, I can't stay in house.
they left the other EMT as they were having me leave, take me out of the house. They left one guy by himself trying to hold me. So trying to hold me up against the ambulance. We live on a little bit of a hill, and he was apparently still. They don't make EMTs as strong as they used to, I guess.
Apparently not.
Apparently
he was really struggling trying to hold me up against the truck. But, you know, think of and you laugh about that, and obviously we have. But had he not been able to hold me, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, because you would have been rolling down the hill. You'd still be going.
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely a viral video of Jeffy rolling out from the back of an ambulance with a gown flapping in the wind that would have broken the internet.
It definitely would have broken the internet. But, it was, I'm sure that he all of a sudden realized, guys,
need a little help here.
800-pound guy here.
Yeah.
All right. And, of course, my wife, loving me so much, decided, hey, I'll take a picture.
Yeah, I did wonder how we had a picture. I mean, she pretty much saved your life, so it's hard to be critical. But the fact that she was documenting your loading into the ambulance on social media was questionable.
And trust me, there's some pictures that will not ever get posted.
Probably to all of our benefit, I think, on that one, Jeff.
All right, we're really grateful that you're still around.
Thank you. I love you. You know that.
We love you, man.
We love you, but we're not going to admit it here on the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Except for just that once for me. And then that's it. All right. Jeffy, continue to recover and don't push it. All right.
See you soon.
All right. See ya.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.